And I chose Obadiah as a topic to talk on. I thought it would be easy to get enough information out of that one chapter book, just 21 verses, and I noticed that it was so short, and then I started looking on the internet for information, and there's a ton of information on the internet about Obadiah. And while looking on the internet, I wanted some examples to follow, so I typed in Homer Haley Obadiah. And what do you know, up come a class that Homer Haley had held discussing the book of Obadiah. And it was, of course, it was outstanding because Homer always does a great job. And then I got a disc. It's one of Larry's discs, I believe, on Obadiah. It was Lowell Williams' class on Obadiah while he was still in Kirkland. And, of course, that one also was outstanding. And I was tempted just to bring that disc and plug it in and let you get a good lesson instead. But both very important, strong men in the Bible. First of all, who is Obadiah? Somebody knows. When's the last time that you have studied Obadiah? Yeah, when
we went through the chronological Bible.
Yeah, I was trying to remember. Then the only time I can remember of going through Obadiah is when Carol Lee and I were in Idaho attending church in Caldwell. We went through a class on Obadiah, and it was interesting. But of course, that was in the late 70s. So it's been a while since I've really gone through and had a good study of the book of Obadiah. The book can be broken down into five divisions. Obadiah 1 through 4, God pronounces his judgment against Edom. Verses 5 through 9 talks about how Edom will be annihilated. In verses 10 through 14, why Edom will be annihilated. And verses 15 through 16, Edom and the day of the Lord. In the last four verses, it's about Israel's triumph over Edom. And I've always, you know, Larry's done a good job explaining to us about the day of the Lord, and I understood it pretty well, I thought, and I went through and studied this, and Edom's and the day of the Lord, and have a better understanding now of what, a clearer understanding of what the day of the Lord means. And what I got out of that is the day of the Lord is the day that judgment will be given out to a certain nation that his message is directed toward. And, of course, who did Obadiah prophesy for, or to? Edom. And in this lesson that I have, Edom and Esau are sometimes used interchangeably, because Esau is the one who founded the nation of Edom. Edom had one big problem. The big problem was they were contrary to the Lord's will. But what was Edom's biggest problem, would you suspect? Pride. They were very proud of who they were, where they were, what they had. And pride is a term that is a little bit misleading to me. Pride in Edom, pride is in a negative context. And in that, I would rather use the term arrogant. Because Edom was arrogant, and we'll talk a whole lot more about that a little later. And when I think of arrogance, you can see a lot of it on your television this weekend and first part of next week. with the all the athletes we have, when they do something they're supposed to do, like score a touchdown, kick an extra point, or make a basket, they've got to show a little arrogance when they do that. They'll do their touchdown dance, they'll pound their chest, they'll point to the sky, and in doing that, I think they're dishonoring God, because most of them, if not all of them, are doing it without really knowing what they're doing. We can read in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 2, and we'll go through this, and there are some of these verses I would ask people from the audience to read. And Ecclesiastes, I'll go back and read this one. Yeah, I've got it typed out here. It says, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher. "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity, and there is no profit under the sun. Everything that you think you have been great and accomplished while you're here on earth, and you're depending on it, probably is not the thing to do. The only thing you should depend on while you're here is God and His message and His guidelines for us." When I go through this lesson, I'll be reading a lot of it. Part of it is because of a bad memory. I go through and read something, and I go back and think, well, now what did that say? And I don't know, so I read it again. Those who find their safety and security in the things under the sun will finally be destroyed, along with the things in which they trusted. But those who find their safety and security in the eternal God will never be shaken. This is the central message of the Bible, so clearly presented in the little book penned by the prophet Obadiah. When did he pen this prophecy? That one's kind of a tough one, because when I was doing the studies, there was two different dates given, and both have pretty good arguments about that date. The first date they gave was 845 B.C. for the writing of this book. And then there's another argument that states that 586. What does that date bring to memory? 586 B.C. I got the right date. The destruction of Jerusalem. That's what they said in these articles. It was those two dates, 586 and 845. And my tendency is to go with 845 because it fits in with the other prophets who were prophesying at that time and the nations that were having a lot of trouble at that time. It's the shortest book in the Old Testament, and among all written prophets, Obadiah provides an overview of the message presented in each of the written prophets. God's judgment on the unbelieving Gentiles who oppose God's chosen people, Israel, and God's grace and unlimited deliverance of the believing Israel. The author, of course, is Obadiah, which means servant of the Lord. And in the Old Testament, 12 other men are identified with that name Obadiah. Of course, none of them being related to this Obadiah, but they had enough information that the scholars could distinguish who these other 12 men were. We don't know much about anything about Obadiah except that he penned this letter and he must have lived in Judea at this time, because Judea was a big part of why this prophecy went out. Of course, Edom being the main reason. The historical context, from the historical references in the book, we can locate Obadiah's ministry in Judea during the reign of Jehoram. He reigned from 848 to 841 B.C. He was the son of Jehoshaphat. Edom is indicated because of his, is indicted because of his violence against his brother Jacob. On the day of Jacob's distress, Edom stood aloof and, as strangers, carried off its wealth, and foreigners entered its gates and cast lots for Jerusalem. Edom was like one of them. And after a fierce struggle with Judah, Edom, between Edom and Judah, Judah was cast off by Edom as or conquered. Edom was more or less a free nation at that time. After that happened, the Palestinians and the Arabians invaded Judah and carried off all the goods found in the king's palace, together with the sons and wives. Not a son of them was left except Jehoaz. Jehoaz was the youngest. This best fits in Obadiah chapter 11, not chapter, verses 11 through 14. When the Philistines, Arabians, and Edomites entered Jerusalem, they cast lots to decide what portions of the city would be granted to each contingent of the purpose, for the purpose of plunder. And, you know, plunder brings a little better term to me. Like, it's a better term would probably be looters. They came in and they just stripped Judah of all of their belongings. The literary theme of the book, the animosity between Edom and the Israelites, and Edom's punishment because of that, is a literal theme of this book of Obadiah. And you might want to wonder, I think you probably, most of you know, why was there such bitterness between Edom and Judah? The reason is Judah, represented by Jacob, and Edom, represented by Esau, Jacob and Esau, the sons of Rebekah. They started their disagreements and tussles before they were even born, and that continued on for quite some time. Even though Esau and Jacob had long passed on, people like David, the kings of the Israel, David, Solomon, and others had problems with Edom. Why did Jacob and Esau have such problems? One hated the other with enough enmity to say he was going to kill him. Why was that?
Jacob stole
Esau's birthright, and there was one other. Birthright, and now he took his blessings also. And with that, yes.
But also, the father favored one and the mother favored the other.
Yeah,
and
very
it
true.
It was prophesied by God what would happen. So the mother did things that assisted God in what she thought needed to be done. So.
Yeah, that's true. Who did the mother favor?
Jacob.
And the father favored Esau. What was the physical appearance of Esau?
Red
and hairy. And he used that, Jacob used that red and hairiness of Esau in trying to deceive Isaac to give him the blessings. And he did, and Jacob did receive the blessings from Jacob, from Esau, from who? Isaac. It says, Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessings of his father had given him. He said to himself, the day of your mournings for your father is near, and I will kill my brother Jacob. Then Esau moved to the land of Seir, the red sandstone area of the southeast of the Dead Sea. I wished I had... On the internet, I found some PowerPoints who had some good photographs, but I didn't find that PowerPoint presentation until last evening, and I didn't dare try to incorporate that in here. It had a lot of good pictures of Petra and the area of Edom, and probably the area most well known is Petra. It's an amazing structure, no longer inhabited, as God had said it wouldn't be. They were driven out. The land of Seir is the land of Edom. And Edom showed, or Esau showed his ire, disrespect, or ire towards Esau by refusing the Israelites' passage through the land of Edom. He would not let them pass through it, so they had to go a little longer route. And and when the Israelites were on their way to the Promised Land, the Edomites came out against them with a large, powerful army. Even then, God told Israel, do not abhor an Edomite. That's a good message, also a good message for us. You know, do not abhor someone who does you wrong. And that's hard to do sometimes. You got to kind of bite your tongue. And then after the time has passed a little bit, you can gain a little more respect for that person or that the people. But did Esau or Edom gain any more respect for Judah? No, they were a bitter people. The enmity between the seed of Jacob and the seed of Esau is seen even in some New Testament scriptures. Edom was later controlled by Assyria and Babylon in the 5th century BC. They were forced by the Nabataeans to leave their territory and move into the southern plains of Palestine, where they became known as the Edomites. Who is a prominent Edomite? There's a person that you all know of. And what the Edomites were the people that were forced to be circumcised as they entered Judah or Jacob, forced most of them to be circumcised. And with that, I'm not sure how well they took on the beliefs of Judah, but not too well, I would imagine, because the king, or the great one of the Edomites, is Herod the Great. Herod was the one who, under Roman rule in 37 B.C., this was the king that attempted to murder Jesus by ordering all the babies under 2 years old be killed. Obadiah, the oldest of all the writing prophets, takes up here the topic of the doom of Edom. Edom is the supreme object of God's wrath. What caused God's wrath towards Edom? What was so wrong about Edom that God was so upset with him and made him the object of supreme wrath? The basic reasons were his pride and self-sufficiency. Didn't believe that he needed help from anybody else. They were self-sufficient in themselves. The book gives five reasons for the pride and self-sufficiency. Beings that are located in that valley where Petra is, they had great pride in their safety and security. They thought nobody could take them down from their home base in that valley. And as we all know, that did happen a little bit later on. The pride of the heart had deceived you. You who live in the cliffs of the rocks, make your homes on heights. You who say to yourselves, who can bring me down to the ground? Though you soar like an eagle and make your nest among the stars. Edom's imposing capital city of Petra was impregnable and virtually inaccessible. Edom found her security in the cliffs and the rocks. Some of the peaks reached as high as 5,700 feet. And surrounding her like a fortress. The deep, terrifying gorges kept the enemy away. Edom found her safety in the security of her surroundings. However, there is something more involved in the high peaks and lofty cliffs. The prophet speaks about her soaring like an eagle and making her nest amongst the stars. That reminds us of someone else who thought to himself, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit enthroned in the Mount of Assembly on the utmost heights of the sacred mountains. I will ascend above the tops of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. Any guess at who said that? Whose intent that was? That was Satan's attempt to do that. And so here Edom is being partially compared to Satan. They certainly had a lot of the faults of Satan. Edom was a rich land. They had a lot of mineral deposits, and they're also rich because they were the trading highway went right through Edom and through their major cities. And when the caravans came through and wanted to move on to their trading spots, they would be charged a tax to not be able to go through Edom. If they didn't go through Edom, they would have to go a much longer route, which was tiresome. So most of the caravans just paid their taxes. But if the caravan was small enough, Edom would bring its army out and take the caravan, take all their goods, and kill the men of the caravan. Edom was also very proud of her allies. Edom was proud of her allies and friends and their political alliances. We can see that in verse 7 of Obadiah. Verse 7, all the men in your confederacy shall force you to the border. The Men at peace with you shall deceive you and shall prevail against you. Those who eat your bread and lay a trap for you, no one is aware of it. So Edom had its allies, and it's kind of like, you know, you have a friend that's really not a friend. They'll take advantage of you whenever they can. And this happened to Edom with, as far as its allies were concerned. They had a group of men, they didn't give them any special name, that Edom called the wise men. And what happened when the caravans went through, these wise men would get together, the leaders of the caravan, and discuss the matters of life in that area and the political substances. And they called them the wise men. Edom also had a problem with pride of their military power. Obadiah talks about her warriors, her military power for which Edom was proud. All these things for which Edom is proud, the prophet tells her, will be taken away. For her lofty heights, she shall be brought down to the ground. She will be ransacked and hidden treasures pillaged. All her allies will deceive and overpower her and set a trap for her. The wise men will be destroyed. The warriors will be terrified and will be cut down in the slaughter. Anything and everything that man trusts and relies upon will be taken away. This world and everything you have in it is going to be taken away. It won't last forever. These things will be taken away not because they are evil in and of themselves, but because they take the place of God. Obviously, you cannot allow anything in your life take the place of God, like staying home this morning and watching more playoff football games. That's not good. It's, a lot of people will miss church services because if they got things that are more important to do, and obviously they are not more important to do. Man trusting in these things makes himself God and does not see the need for God. He raises his fist against God and says, I don't care for you. I don't need you. I couldn't imagine any of us outright saying that. But yet we do sometimes say that with our actions. And those actions can bring you down and separate you from God. Number six, pride against God expressed in persecuting God's people. Edom was constantly a thorn in the side of Jacob, or Esau was constantly a thorn in the side of Jacob and his descendants. The major reason for the judgment of Edom is because of the violence against her brother Jacob. You will be covered with shame. You will be destroyed forever. That is in verse 10 of Obadiah. The details of the violence against his brother are given in the next four verses. In verse 11, it says, they stood without assistance. If your brother was being attacked, it seems like you would step forward and lend some assistance in defeating them. Edom didn't. Edom, matter of fact, Edom rejoiced over Judah's downfall. Edom plundered the city of Jerusalem. They prevented the escape of Judah's fugitives, and by preventing the escape, they killed a lot of their captives. This is pride and rebellion against God. Jesus said, if the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Remember the words I spoke to you. No servant is greater than his master. If they persecute me, they will persecute you also. If they obey my teachings, they will obey yours also. They will treat you this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who sent me. The ultimate outcome of Edom, which is also subtitled The Day of the Lord, speaking about the judgment of Edom because of the violence against her brother Jacob, Obadiah turns to speak to all nations, including the United States at that, including the United States, who will turn their back on God, and talks about their final judgment in terms of the day of the Lord. Is the day of the Lord coming for the United States? I hope not, but the way that things are moving right now, it may be just a matter of time. The day of the Lord is near for all nations. As you have done, it will be done to you. Your deeds will return upon your own head. That reminds me of children's arguments. I hear it a lot from Ethan and Evan. He says, well, he hit me first, so I had to hit him back. And then the spat was on until mom or dad steps in. And then the spat gets settled rather quickly. So the day of the Lord is near for all nations. As you have done, it will be done to you. Your deeds will return upon your own head. On the other hand, but on Mount Zion will be deliverance. It will be holy, and the house of Jacob will possess its inheritance. The two major aspects of the day of the Lord is judgment. Judgment will be brought upon all those who have not believed in God, who have not believed Him, and have did what I mentioned a little bit early. You know, they denied God, they denied God's people, they attacked God's people, and the wicked nations will drink of the cup of God's wrath. So all nations will drink continually. They will drink and drink and be as if they had never been. That's referring to the looting that they do. They completely strip a nation as has been done. As the psalmist describes God's wrath, the psalmist being David, in the hand of the Lord is a cup full of foaming wine mixed with spices. He pours it out, and all the wicked of the earth drink it down to the very dregs. Isaiah declares in God's words, I will punish the world for its evil, the wicked for their sins. I will put an end to the arrogance and the haughtiness, and will humble the pride of the ruthless. Arrogance and haughtiness, does that describe Esau's people? Those who trust in things will be destroyed, along with all the things in which they trusted. And the second part, there will be judgment or there will be deliverance. In the last day, the mountains of the Lord's temple will be established as a chief among the mountains. It will be raised above the hills, and all nations will stream to it. The law will go out from Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Those who rebel against God, trust in themselves, will finally be destroyed. Those who trust in the Lord will finally be delivered for eternity. To whom do you think Obadiah is talking? To Edom? No, the prophet is not talking to Edom. He is talking about Edom to his own people. Application. We see three applications to us today in the book of Obadiah. One is that God keeps his promise. What God says, he will do. He made a promise to Abraham. So I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. All the people on the earth will be blessed through you. He had promised Jacob through Isaac's blessings. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed. God keeps his promises. Similarly, God kept his promise to Edom too. Your dwelling will be away from the earth's richness, away from the dew of the heavens above. You will live by the sword, and you will serve your brother. One of the most striking statements of God's faithfulness is the Bible comes from the mouth of a heathen prophet. When the Moabite king Balak saw the swarms of Israelites camped on the Jordan across from Jericho, he was filled with dread, and he summoned Balaam to curse the Israelites. However, Balaam was not successful in cursing the Israelites, and when the king, Moabite king Balak, kept forcing him, he said, God is not a man that he should lie, nor the son of man that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? What he is saying is that God is faithful in keeping his promises, and no one can revoke the promises that he has given. God, number two, besides keeping his promises, God makes his own choices. God is the supreme being, and not only does God keep his promises, he makes his own choices. Obadiah speaks of the final doom of Edom and the final deliverance and blessings of Judea. However, God already made his choice between Esau and Jacob even before they were born. As Malachi writes, this is Malachi 1, verses 2 through 3. It says, was not Esau Jacob's brother, the Lord says, yet I have loved Jacob, but Esau I have hated. And I have turned the mountains to wastelands and left their inheritance to desert jackals. That's a kind of a harsh statement, but it's a fact. It's true. God hates sinners and sins. I'm not sure that he actually hates the person's soul. He hates what the person is doing. And God is always ready to forgive those who repent of their wrongdoings, which Edom never did. We too will stand, we have to stand before the Lord and give an account for our choices. We will not be condemned like the unbelievers. Romans 8:1. However, we will have to give an account to the Lord for how we spend our life, how we use our resources, and he has given us as his stewards, how we decide our priorities and goals, and where our heart is set. These things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us. Then the fulfillment of the ages has come. It's 1 Corinthians 1 Corinthians 10 and 11. Those who trusted in things under the sun will be destroyed, along with those things. But those who trust in the Lord will be finally be delivered and enjoy his blessings. Some trust in chariots, some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. They are brought to their knees and fall, but we rise and stand firm. The boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, all the beauty, all the wrath ever given, awaits alike in the inevitable hour. Paths of glory leads to the grave, but the man who does the will of God lives forever. And that's the extent of what I have for you. Do you have any questions or comments that you would like to make? And with that, I guess we'll dismiss a couple minutes early. You'll have a little extra time to visit with everyone. And I like the message given here, because we often are deceived by our own pride in ourselves. Another word for pride, you need to remember, is arrogance, which God abhors. Thank you.